Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are back again in the Billy Meyer material, and I want to just give you a quick update on kind of what's going on this end of the microphone. I still have been embroiled in intensive striving in the day job, so this kind of makes it difficult to schedule guests and that sort of thing because I never know how late I'm going to be working. I am speaking to you on a Friday morning. I did get a day off, and I'm going to try to take these Fridays off on a regular basis as long as that's possible. I know there are a lot of people that listen to the archives that probably are very interested in the Meyer material, and there's probably some that are somewhat interested and would like to hear from some guests. Right now, bear with me, folks. This just seems to be the direction that I'm led in for one reason or another. I just want to let you know I'm very sensitive to the people that would like to hear other guests and not just me talking all the time. I do think about that. I do consider that very much. But for various reasons, which are actually somewhat difficult to articulate, it seems like we are where we are, and we're just going to have to flow with it a little bit. One of the things that this book says, The Might of the Thoughts, Mach der Gedanken, that Billy has written, is that good thoughts lead to good feelings lead to good habits, and good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. One of the habits that I just developed about, I guess a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, I'm not sure, the time blends for me very much, is that the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is I pick up this book and start reading it. A lot of times in the morning I'm not very coherent. And about a lot, it's very strange because physically I can hardly do anything, but I'm able to open this book up and start reading. And this reading this book first thing in the morning pulls my thoughts together for the day, and it puts me in a neutral, an equalized, neutral, positive thinking mode. And if someone's new listening to this for the first time, they may not understand what that means, but there's a kind of thinking that's very productive, and it's related to your attitude and your point of view. And if I had to distill down into maybe five or six characteristics of our thoughts that Billy talks about here focusing on, is he says to be optimistic, to be confident, to be cheerful, to be relaxed, to be enthusiastic, and to be thankful. These are six characteristics of our thinking. There are probably more. But I have to tell myself, this week I did get a little bit into the negative thinking right near the end of the week, and it's still having some ramifications on my consciousness. So look into yourself, analyze your own thoughts, analyze your feelings too, because the feelings grow out of the thoughts. What am I talking about here? I'm talking about part of the spiritual teachings of a man named Edward Albert Meyer, who lives about an hour east or 45 minutes east of Zurich in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, nestled in the pine forests in the mountains of northern Switzerland. He's written over 40 books. He's written over 2,000 contact reports. And these books are of incredible importance. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or not, but one way or another, through developing this habit, I'm now going through this book for the fifth time, and it's no less interesting to me the fifth time through than it was the first time through. And in fact, it's in many ways more interesting because I've developed the neural pathways in my mind now to start processing what this book is really all about. And in the introduction, and this is by a lady named Elizabeth Moosberger, who is associated with the FIGU group. Her husband wrote the book, They Fly, I believe it's called. It's up on my bookshelf up there. And he was one of the guys that kept the apple that Billy got off the mothership. And he has it soaking in some kind of alcohol or something. So, you know, I know a skeptic could tear that apart, attack that. But listen to what she says here. I just will read very short little sections. She says, the impulses for striving higher thereby come out of the innermost nature, which is a component of the spirit form, and thereby is purely creational. So we have a spirit form, which, as you know, is a fragment of the universal consciousness. It resides in our spiritual. It resides in an area called the superior colliculus, and that's the area that's associated with sight and with looking around back and forth. The spirit form provides the energy to the whole body, the spirit energy that keeps us alive. If you ever see an animal or a person die, you'll recognize that right away when the light goes out of the eyes. Because the spirit form leaves the body, and you can tell there's nothing there. It's just an empty shell. The spirit form is, operationally speaking, a fragment of this universal consciousness. And it gives you impulses. Now, these are little signals that come from the spirit form, and these are the impulses for striving higher. And they come out of the innermost nature. Remember, striving is one of the creational natural laws. That's why we're here on the earth. That's why we go through all these gazillions of reincarnations to evolve our consciousness. So, for example, one of the impulses for striving that I experience is doing this show. Another example of the impulse for striving would be the habit I've developed of reading this book. Another impulse for striving, I think, might be related to understanding the terminology that Billy uses, the German terminology that's talked about in the book. You also have impulses for striving related to however you earn money during your day job. You have impulses for striving related to your hobbies. If your thinking is neutral, equalized, positive, you will start to develop hobbies. And these hobbies, they have a way of growing and growing and growing. And eventually, I can only speak for myself, they've become a source of income, kind of a smaller source of income over the years. So you what happens is you develop multiple vocations. It's hard to describe. It's a very strange occurrence that occurs. And you will start to realize how different you are than most people. If you're one of the couple hundred people that listen to these archives, you know that you're not, quote unquote, normal. And this is a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's kind of a bad thing because in some ways it separates you from humanity. But again, it's a good thing because you're part of the group of people that's going to pull us into the new time when people start to understand what the creation is and they start to understand what our role is and how we should be thinking and how we should be good stewards of the planet. And it's a time coming when we'll understand the dangers of overpopulation. and how there's such a horrible cycle of death going on this planet because of overpopulation. You can see all the roadkill of all the animals and the destruction of the forest. Well, we don't really equate this with our own destruction yet, but it is our own destruction. We can see it every day in the traffic jams and the crowdedness and the endless pressures associated with making more money. The whole corporate agenda is counter, I think, to the spiritual life. So the time that you take to read the Meyer material, most importantly, to listen to shows like this, is very critical, because our consciousness is much like a tree. What is on the outside is the trunk and the crown, but the roots that go down are what stabilizes you. And you will find over time that these teachings will stabilize your mentality. And even if you screw up and you go into negative thinking and you recognize that you went into negative thinking, and by the way, one of the components and aspects of negative thinking is very repetitive. It's extremely repetitive. It runs out of control. You can't stop it. It just runs. So you need to learn to recognize also the thoughts that are neutral, positive in nature. You know, I mentioned optimism and confidence and relaxation and cheerfulness and enthusiasm. Another thing related to neutral positive thinking is fascination and interest. And when you go to approach a difficult problem, if you go there with an open mind, with fascination and interest, and you're open to whatever, quote unquote, the universe brings you in relation to a given project, you're much more likely to be successful, and you'll notice how quickly you go through things. It's very interesting. Now, one of the things I want to talk about in this show, and we'll get to it probably in the second half, is some of the work of a fellow named Mauro Biglino, I believe his name is. And it's very, very interesting because he is a translator who worked for the Vatican for a long time. He translated 23 books for the Vatican, and they had him go back and relook at the Old Testament and the Masoretic texts. And he was completely neutral. He's a non-religious person whatsoever. And according to him, Mauro Biglino, the Bible does not talk about God. And we'll try to get into that a little bit later in the show. But I first want to at least cover, again, some of these concepts in the Might of Thoughts, because it's really where the rubber meets the road. And it's what gets us through the day, is learning to control our thinking. And we want to be in balance. We want to be in a neutral, positive frame of reference. Good thinking leads to good feelings. Remember, the feelings come out of the thoughts. And your might is anchored in your thoughts. And you're the forger of your own fortune. In other words, your thoughts bring circumstances into your life. So your thoughts bring into fruition circumstances in your life, even bad circumstances. So you have to constantly monitor these thoughts. So good thoughts lead to good feelings, which lead to good circumstances. And the habits that you develop are the two things between the feelings and the actual circumstances. So part of what we're focusing here to do is to learn to think independently. And the evolution of the consciousness can only come through independent thinking. Now, that means neutral, positive thinking. So be aware of those rotating negative thoughts that will shut down. If you're thinking neutral, positive, your thoughts are literally powered by your spirit form, which is powered by creation. On the other hand, if you separate and do not recognize the negative and the positive in any circumstances, so if you just see the negative, you get into what's called asartang, which is to get out of control of the good human nature. Asartang means to get very bad out of control of the good human nature. And negative thinking leads to this, as well as over-positive thinking. And the neutral positive thinking repairs the psyche. So that's what we're shooting for here, is repairing the psyche. If you've gone into this unhealthy thinking. So, we're the creator of our own morality, of our own character, of our entire personality. We're the creator of the state of our own psyche. We are also the smith of our entire life circumstances, our environment, and our destiny. So you need to clarify your thinking. Now, this is a dangerous thing in some ways, because if you're having negative thoughts, sometimes it's better just to terminate those thoughts. When I say clarify, I think it's a little better to clarify the healthy thoughts. So if you're having neutral positive thoughts, but they're kind of fuzzy, but they're, you know, warm and fuzzy, you know, they're good, they're not, but work to make those clearer. Work to make your thoughts less confused. Work to make your neutral positive thoughts easier to understand. Work to make them have no uncertainty, make them intelligible, make your thoughts free from ambiguity. So now this is where you get the power in your thoughts. When you start to lose the ambiguity and they start to clarify and they get purposeful, you can do amazing things. Once occurs. Again, the consciousness is like a garden, and if you maintain it, you can stop those wildly growing negative thoughts. I don't know why the negative thoughts, they grow wildly. Remember, there are two personalities here that are fighting for dominance. It's your inner spiritual nature, which is related to your spirit form, and it's the kind of the false you, the temporary you, that wants to justify and complicate everything. It sometimes looks, this unhealthy you, tries to look way, way into the future, and tries to see these negative things. And that's not so good either. What you need to do is gather the sweet aspects of your own thoughts and imagine your garden being this beautiful green with trees. This is a big garden, really big. It's got trees in it. It's got bushes. It's got, you know, sweet potatoes and regular potatoes and tomatoes and strawberries, and it's just luxurious, and it goes everywhere. It's massive. It's all over. That's what you need. That's an example of one of these wish dreams that you can use to stop negative thinking. And one thing about negative thinking, it will weaken you. It also takes away your perceptive ability. It narrows your focus into this very small area, which is forced into a cycle that repeats over and over again. So So when that happens, you know, you can fall prey to psychical disorders and illnesses. You can, if you stay in that frame of thinking, circumstances of life will be very difficult for you. But you really are the Lord and Master of your thoughts. You need to practice self-cognition, self-examination, self-control, and then what you think becomes real, and these good and positive thoughts need to be tended and nurtured. And part of that is you need to have a good opinion of yourself. You know, it says in the Way to Live book, you need to be your own best friend. And one of the ways to be your own best friend is to nurture these good thoughts. That means you need to protect them. You need to support and encourage these good thoughts. You need to foster them. You need to educate yourself, train yourself. You need to promote your own psychological development. You need to cherish these good thoughts. Let me read something here from Die Art zu Leben, The Way to Live. It says, the means that the human being must first give much to him or herself so that she can also in turn give to others. So you need to be your own best friend. You need to give to yourself before you can give to others. And you need to be able to receive so that others can also give. And this whole principle of giving and receiving lies first and foremost in the human being acquiring knowledge by searching for the truth and then giving to yourself. So as you spend your habit of reading the psyche or the way to live or the mind of thoughts, and you start to acquire knowledge, you give to yourself. And eventually, you'll be able to give to others. If nothing else, you give them an example of how to live. The inner self is the true personality, the real, the effective ego of the human being. So we have an inner eye that is connected to creation. So that false ego, we have a delusive self-image and we have a true eye, inner eye, that's connected to creation. And that's the part of you that's evolving over all these lifetimes. And even when you were a fetus in the womb, your subconscious was programmed with all the evolutive values of your previous life. So even though you're a tiny baby, you have the spirit form with all its impulses that are ready to impulse you again. And once you're ready for these impulses, and they're there, they keep coming and they keep coming. And that's why it mentions in the Mind of Thoughts on page 36 that even the fetus has profound thoughts sometimes, which is really amazing. Let me read this. Thus at birth, when there are basic characteristics already present, when these were already formed with the development of the human being and was simply through the might of the thoughts in the developing human being. Therefore, it is erroneous to assume that the newly conceived life lives without thoughts during the 9-month period of human development in the womb. That's not the case. And that it does not develop greatly or it does not develop at all in regard to its entire personality as well as in regard to its character, morality, and psyche. Because that allegedly only happens after birth. No, that's not true. The fetus is developing in the womb. It's developing its thoughts. As a matter of fact, thoughts pertaining to profound learning and the forming of personality, as well as the forming of morality in the psyche and the basic character, are namely already maintained by the developing human being in the womb. Now remember, we have a spirit form, and the general age of spirit forms for human beings on the earth is about 4 million years old. and you've had numerous previous personalities, numerous previous lives, but you're shielded by from having to deal with all the memories. So we can focus on this life, so we can focus on the evolution of the spiritual consciousness in this life. And this is also from creation that this happens, to shield us from all the memories. Now think about the negative memories you have in this life that are sometimes, you know, difficult to not focus on. But it's good to forget. That's one of the ways of being your best friend. If you have failures or bad circumstances that got out of control, you need to be able to forget and move on. Basically, it's true that the human being attracts what he is. All quirks, inclinations, wishes, desires, and the zeal, which is the end point, the outcome, can be changed by the might of the thoughts. Now, Billy talks about this term God, and I'm going to get into this, and I'll transition into this quickly. You know, you've heard the saying, God helps those who help themselves. In that sense, Billy says, God is he or she who forms the human being's destiny, the human being, him or herself. And this God is the inner self from which the thoughts with their might are created. Therefore, the human being himself creates, through the might of her or his thoughts, every one of his own states, regardless of whether it is a state of actual inner freedom or a negative state of inner imprisonment. And let me elaborate on the inner imprisonment. When you're rotating negative thoughts, you're in inner imprisonment. And believe me, as the more your thoughts free up, when you fall back into inner imprisonment, you don't like it at all, and you want to get out of there because that's not a good place to be. Through this, his or her thinking alone, the human being determines whether she stagnates or evolves. So this show and the shows like it are designed to help you evolve your consciousness. So Billy has written all these books. He's in the background. You know, he's not doing shows like this. He's not going out and speaking like Michael Utterbrook or Michael Horn. He is just generating all this information, and it's our job to go get it. So, thoughts and actions and formations which result from them are the formers and guardians of one's own destiny. They hold the human being prisoner. So you're a prisoner of your own thoughts when your thoughts are low and they're negative, and they create and give when they're good. They give you a sense of freedom and harmony. Harmony is really important. And that's one of the other things that's disturbed when the negative rotating thoughts come in, is your sense of internal harmony will be disturbed. It may have been such a long time since you've had harmony that you don't remember what it's like. And I go through phases like that too. So I'm not throwing stones at you, believe me. But when harmony comes back into your thinking, it's a very, very good thing. Your optimism is there. Your confidence is there. And it's very difficult in a insane society that's rushing headlong to its own destruction sometimes to maintain your inner freedom. Because it's your inner freedom that are going to lead to good circumstances in your life. Wishes and prayers, according to the might of thoughts, are never petitions to a god or saint. Rather, they are thoughts generated by oneself, which are fed back out of the consciousness and into the inner self, to one's own consciousness and inner self, and they create fulfillment. So this is the way, it's the rotating of the neutral positive thoughts that are kind of a prayer. And you can pray. The Meyer information says you can pray to your own spirit. Which is very interesting. In other words, your prayers would be something like, do not throw me into confusion and delusion, but release me from my misunderstanding. Your might shall unfold within me, on earth and in the universes. These are prayers that you're kind of directing at your own consciousness. You know, we're not talking about depending on the term, the religious term God. Remember, there's a universal consciousness that is a neutral, positive intelligence. It is referred to in the Meyer information as a Wesenheiten. And Wesenheiten generally do not have a self-determined possibility of evolution. In other words, the God is not a God. The universal consciousness is a neutral superintelligence which created all the stars and all the galaxies and all the solar systems. And it works on some kind of predetermined plan. There's only a small extent which it uses its own volition. It's kind of automatic. Now, a Wesen in the German is an independently existing life form like a human being or a dog or a cat, which has its own free will that's involved in its evolution. And since we're talking about German terms, let me just take a second to talk about zeal. The English term aim or goal is not acceptable as a translation for zeal, because zeal is an endpoint or a culmination point. So your zeal, one of the endpoints and culmination points for this study, is the development of the healthy habit of neutral positive thinking, which brings harmony into your consciousness. So that's a little bit from The Might of Thoughts again. So I'm going to digress slightly and talk about, hi Gemini, welcome to the chat room. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the research of this fella, Mauro Biglino, and how it, I think, in many ways, supports what the Meyer material has taught about these Giza intelligences, which began initially with a man named Erasame. So we're talking, well, about 12,000 years ago, probably, when this process all started. And this was after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, when the Earth was knocked off its axis by the giant asteroid that the people from Mu brought in. They destroyed Atlantis. The city of Mu was already destroyed by the Atlanteans. These are extraterrestrial humans that were on the Earth about 150,000 years ago. They almost destroyed the entire Earth. So slowly, over hundreds and even thousands of years, the Earth started to recover. And the people who were left, who survived, had lost their history. They lost their technologies. And they became prey, so to speak, to these intelligences who came back to the Earth. Now, the one guy named Erasame was the guy that went and murdered his father, Jehabe, and he went deep into the interior of the Earth, far below the pyramids, and they established this base. They converted the rooms and the construction deep below the pyramids into their base, and they had a very ancient, large spacecraft down there with smaller ships, strangely dressed guards. And when Billy was down there, he saw artifacts from the crucifixion of Emmanuel, who was later called Jesus. So these intelligences, the Meyer information, referred to as the Giza intelligence. So there was about a 9,000-year period from the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria till when Erisane went underground about 3,000 BC. And he ruled, they kind of ruled the earth underground. Now, if I understand what has happened here, these people were called the Elohim in the ancient Jewish writings. Now, Erisane lost dominance by a man named Hen, who was also known as Jehovah, or the Cruel One. Now, when it was pronounced back then, it was probably called Yahovah. The name for God used by the Hebrews. Now, let me tell you something before we get much more into this, because people like Abraham and Moses didn't speak Hebrew. They spoke some variation of Aramaic or Amorite or something, because the Hebrew language didn't come about until a century or two later. But the Bible, the Old Testament, was written in Hebrew. And when Hebrew is written, only the consonants are in there. There are no vowel points. So when they translate the Hebrew of the Old Testament, the translator comes in and puts in the vowel points. Well, all the people who did the translations of the Old Testament during that time were religious people. So they chose the vowel points not on the basis of what was the most accurate translation. They chose the vowel points in order to support their theology. So, and I'm going to show you some of these translation issues as we continue. So if you have time, there's some software. It's called Bible Gateway. And if you go to BibleGateway.com, you can search for things in the Bible, and you can choose what style of Bible you want to search in. If you search for the word Jehovah in the New International Version, you will not find the word Jehovah. If you search in the King James Bible, which is an English translation of the Christian Bible, made by the Church of England around 1604 and completed around 1611. If you use that version, you will find Jehovah. So there's a split in the biblical community. There's one group that use the word Jehovah, and there's a whole another word that doesn't. Now, the true word Jehovah never probably appeared on the scene until probably around 1600, because there was no letter J in the ancient world. Now, bear with me through some of these complications. In Genesis 22:14, in the King James Version of the Bible, the story here is about Abraham, who is about to sacrifice his son to this God named Jehovah. He was one of the Elohim who were on the earth at that time. And there is a term that appears, and it's the first appearance of the term Jehovah in the King James Bible. It's called Jehovah Jireh, which means, quote unquote, Jehovah will provide. It was a place in the land of Morah, and this is the place where Abraham tied up his son, put him on a bunch of sticks that he piled up, and he was going to kill his son and burn him as an offering to Jehovah. Now, the churches will teach you about how great Abraham was, because he had such faith. He was going to sacrifice his son. Now, today, if a person says that God is talking to them and telling them to kill their firstborn, we consider this person a religious lunatic, a person who is dangerous, a person who needs psychiatric help, who would be locked up if he commits the crime of killing his own child. Now imagine for a moment that the creator of the universe tells you to burn your son alive, or maybe kill him first and then burn his body. If we can take our minds out of the fog of religion, then we can appreciate the insanity of this. So it's not really so far-fetched that the Meyer information tells us that Jehovah/Hen was one of the group of extraterrestrial humans that were using religion to control the earth. Let me step on a little bit to Deuteronomy 20, chapter 20, verse 16, and this is the NIV version. Let me read to you what one of these Elohims is commanding Moses and the Israelites to do. It says, however, in the cities of the nations the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, do not leave alive anything that breathes. Completely destroy them, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, as the Lord your God has commanded you. Otherwise, they will teach you to follow all the detestable things that they do in worshiping their gods, and you will sin against the Lord. So, Jehovah commands the genocide of numerous groups of people because there were more than one Elohim on the earth in those days, and they were competing. And that's why the Elohim of the Hebrews always identified himself. He had to repeat so Moses would know who he was dealing with. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, there is a great translator of the Bible out. His name is Mauro Biglino, and he is a Hebrew scholar, and he says the Bible does not talk about God. His name is Mario Biglino. And he says that the Bible was created, the Old Testament anyway, between the 7th and 9th century AD. In other words, it was translated from these much ancient texts. There were just a stream of consonants. The translator went in and put in the vowel points. And they put in the vowel points to support their religious notions. Now, Mario is a translator of Masoretic Hebrew, and he translated something like 23 books over 10 years for a company called the San Paolo Publisher, which is the Vatican's publishing house. And he has translated 17 volumes of literal translations from the Old Testament. So what he does is he splits the Jewish words into their single components. And he translated the Old Testament literally without interpreting it. And he published something about verbal forms, a kind of analysis that he does. And after a year and a half of translating, he was amazed by what he found out. And the Vatican wasn't too happy about what he translated because he lost his publishing. He lost his job. So, he says most of the Old Testament that we have comes from a person named Aaron ben Moses ben Asher, who was a Jewish scribe who lived in Tiberias in northern Israel. And he refined the Tiberian system of writing vowel sounds in the Hebrew, which is still alive today. Anyway, these Masoretes were the people that translated from the string of consonants, no vowels, in the ancient scriptures. So what they do, these translators would insert the vowels, and when they would do that, they would insert the meanings of the words, and they did so with their theological bias. And I'll give you some examples. We don't even know how these Hebrew words were really pronounced. And Hebrew came later. Moses didn't speak Hebrew. the people in the Exodus didn't speak Hebrew. That's something I didn't even know. And the Jewish language, the Hebrew language, is a transformed sub-Phoenician language, which I don't know that much about. I would like to get into that a little bit. Now, I'm going to take one of the Hebrew words. And let me just tell you, before I studied the Meyer material, I studied under a pastor. His name is Colonel R.B. Thieme, who was a bit of a Hebrew scholar himself. And I remember him translating the word ruach, which we're gonna talk about. And he used the traditional religious translation. That's not what it means. I'm convinced that Mara Bigolino is correct. And his job was to search for the original meanings. He tells you what is there in the Hebrew consonant roots. And let's freewheel. Let's ride on Elohim's ruach. That is, the ruach is Elohim's wind. Unfortunately, the Bible translates as God's spirit. But the term ruach does not mean spirit. It means wind or anything flying in the air quickly, causing wind. So Mario, during one of his things on YouTube, and you can look him up, he sketched what the ruach looks like. And I have this sketch on my website at Exopolitics. So search for Ohio Exopolitics and at exopoliticsohio.us. I think it's on my second Billy Meyer page, and you'll have to scroll down to the section that talks about the Giza intelligences. And you'll see the flying disc, which is really what the ruach was. And this comes from Sumerian pictograms. The ruach, the verb ruach, isn't from Jewish origin. It's a Sumerian word. The pictograph was by the people who first saw the ruach. The ruach hovered over the waters. And there is a lexicon in the Vatican for related to these terms. And one of them is starship. The Elohim's ruach was hovering on the water. Hovering was used as a participle. The same word ruach is used in other parts of the Bible for the typical way of flying that rapacious birds use, like the turkey vulture or the buzzard, when they carry themselves on the wind without moving their wings. And the Sumerians depicted Elohim's ruach in that way. And it's something that's hovering without the moving of the wings. You see, it has nothing to do with God's spirit. Now, let me step back, and I know this is a little off. The case of the Meyer material has again been clarified. The information's out there if you go and look for it. There is a chapter in Numbers, chapter 31. I've quoted this before. And again, Moses is working with one of these Elohim. And this is when Midian was wiped out. And the Lord, the Elohim, Yehovah, said to Moses, take the vengeance on the Midianites for the Israelites. After that, you will be gathered to your people. So Moses said to the people, arm some of your men to go to war against the Midianites, to carry out the Lord's vengeance. Let me tell you, the creator of the universe doesn't work in terms of vengeance whatsoever. And these are not anthropopathic things. That is, religion teaches, oh, it's not real vengeance. God is not vengeful. Not really. These are anthropopathisms. In other words, to describe his behavior, we have to use these terms of accommodation. This is theological whitewash. This is just garbage. the real hen, the real Jehovah, was very vengeful. He was very cruel. Okay, send into battle 1,000 men from each tribe of Israel. So they, I'll go fast so we don't have to read all this. They fought against Midian as the Lord commanded Moses, and they killed every man. And the army came back. And Moses was angry with the officers of the army, the commanders of the thousands and the commanders of the hundreds. And Moses says, have you allowed all the women to live? He asked them. They were the ones who followed Balaam's advice and were the means of turning the Israelites away from the Lord. So the plague struck the Lord's people. So there were multiple Elohims here. Now kill, now listen to this. Now this is what Moses commands these guys to do. Now kill all the boys and kill every woman who has slept with a man. But save for yourselves every girl who has never slept with a man. So they go on and they talk about, after you do all this murder, you got to stay outside the camp a certain time. Now, I think Elohim, the Lord said to Moses, count all the people and the animals that you capture. Divide the spoils. A part will go to the Lord. One out of every 500 went to the Elohim. And I think one out of every 50 of the spoils went to the Hebrews. And 675,000 sheep, 72,000 cattle. I don't know how many millions of people they killed. But they kept 32,000 women who had never slept with a man. Now think about that. If you're a woman and you're listening to this show, this army has killed your grandfather, your grandmother, your father, your mother, killed your brother, killed everyone you know, wiped out your entire race of people, your entire tribe, and now you've been sold essentially into kind of a sexual slavery. Now, do you think you're going to want to sleep with this guy? Probably not, right? So what happens next? You guessed it. Probably a lot of these 32,000 women were raped. Now, there is a provision in here that says if the man is not pleased with the woman, he can just let her go. So she goes out into the wilderness where she starves, or she's killed by a wild animal, or if she's really lucky, she survives somehow and meets up with a group of people or something, and then maybe goes on with her life. So this is the story of Numbers 31:7. I've talked about it before. Elaborate on it a little bit more today. So religion will not evolve your consciousness. Religion will put you back into that slavery. We need to learn about our consciousness. We need to learn how to think. A lot of us think unconsciously, unfortunately. And the unconscious mind usually interacts with things first. Like if you put your hand on a hot stove or a hot bowl or something, you pull your hand back. I did that a couple of days ago, and I jerked back, and I'm like, wow, you know, there's my unconscious kicking in. So our unconscious has the ability to affect our lives in ways that we don't understand. Unconscious phenomena include repressed feelings, automatic skills. Why a musician learns to play things, you train your unconscious to it's really an interesting thing, your fingers moving. Subliminal perceptions, thoughts, habits, hidden phobias, desires. So we have to be aware of the unconscious aspect of this. Because the unconscious can prevent you from the achievement of good and positive things. And the unconscious can wrongly steer your thoughts. Remember, you're working to steer your thoughts, because good thoughts lead to good feelings, which lead to good habits in your life. And you can accomplish amazing things with good habits in your life. Remember, good thoughts lead to good feelings. Good feelings lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. You're the master of your own destiny. You really can create positive circumstances in your life. Now, there is a law called the law of harmony. This is a creational natural law that says suffering is typically an effect of some form of wrong thinking. If the suffering is related to negative or bad things. In this form, suffering indicates that the law of harmony is disregarded and broken. So the goal here is to keep inner harmony, true inner freedom, to have knowledge, progress, love, peace. If you're neutral positive, then harmony exists. And the Goblet of Truth talks about harmony in chapter 22:13. It says, it is necessary that you live in ample harmony with the powers that are in you and around you, as well as with the disharmonious powers that stand in contradiction to them. Whoa, man, that's something that I've seen this week. There are disharmonious powers out there that stand in contradiction. So we got to live in harmony with the disharmonious powers. It's a challenge. Everything is built up on contrariness. So, and everything and everything, there are both poles, a positive and a negative, that must be taken into consideration. So realize that the negative aspects in your life are there and they're necessary. And they're part of your continued progress. So our thoughts can be controlled and maintained along the right path so that we maintain inner freedom and harmony. What is harmony? It's peace. It's unity. You feel this unity within yourself. Inner harmony is neutral positive. Billy talks about neutral as being balanced between the negative and the positive. Now, in an interview in 1988, Billy talks about self-control. And the self-control one possesses must be self-evident and can only be gained through intensive self-study, where every iota of your thoughts is being kept completely safe and under control, regardless of outside influences. One must not allow even the minutest negative vibration of thought and emotion to radiate to others in any way. We must be totally neutral, unbiased in our thinking. And this will eventually become your second nature. I hope you've enjoyed the show. You've been listening to Ohio Excellent Politics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.